There are a lot of things that matter to me. Family, community, culture, and peace of mind. Hi, it's Wilmer Valderrama, and when balancing life, I have to say nothing brings more comfort than having support. And when it comes to ensuring those things that matter to you the most, State Farm offers the support with an agent available in person or on the phone to discuss your coverage options. Support when you need it, however you choose. That's State Farm's way. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
With your Amex card, entertainment benefits like special ticket access and pre-sales to select can't-miss events while supplies last, make every tap music to your ears.
Whether it's her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct has everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
Locatora Radio is a radiophonic novela,
which is just a very extra way of saying
a podcast.
I'm Dios FM.
And I am Mala Munoz.
Locatora Radio is your prima's favorite podcast, hosted by us, Mala and Diosa.
We're two IG friends turned podcast partners, breaking down pop culture, feminism, sexual wellness, and offering fresh takes on trending topics through nuanced interviews with up-and-coming Latinx creatives.
Known as Las Locatoras, Las Mamis of Myth and Bullshit, and Las Podcasteras Peligrosas, we were podcasting independently since 2016, but joined iHeartMedia's My Cultura Network in 2022.
This year, we're continuing to share stories from the Latinx community pa todo el mundo.
Welcome to Season 8.
Are you listening?
Hola, hola, locamores. Welcome to Season 8 of Locatora Radio. I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
You're tuning in to Capítulo 186, 186.
Last time on Locatora Radio, we had an end-of-the-year check-in. Go ahead and listen to that episode, leave us a review, subscribe to Locatora Radio, and share with a friend.
So we're going to jump right into today's episode because we have a packed episode. We're going to be talking about transformative justice and what happens after a call out, a public call out at that. Once the dust settles, what do you do when you're at the center of a call out? How do you heal? How do you move forward? Last year, Doris Anahí Muñoz was publicly called out on Instagram in November of 2022 by people in the local creative scene of Los Angeles.
Many of the initial social media posts have since been taken down in the year since the initial call out, but some people who worked on projects with Doris, most notably the Disney Mija documentary, claim that they were manipulated and exploited. A year later, this will be the first time Doris talks about the call out in an interview with us here on Locatora Radio.
When Doris's team approached us about having her on Locatora Radio, we were interested in hosting this conversation because we've seen the ebb and flow of callouts over the years. Since 2016, and definitely before, but at least since the existence of Locatora Radio, we have seen a number of callouts on Twitter, on Instagram, but we've actually never seen those callouts result in public transformative justice. But social media callouts, in our experience, tend to take place online for the most part, and they stay there. So what happens after that? And I think that that's the framework for today's episode. We've seen people disappear from social media completely. I can think of a handful of people that have completely went off the grid, or on the other end, continue on like nothing ever happened.
And we are not here to play judge or jury. Nobody is on trial here. We're not like dissecting evidence. We are not deciding whether or not claims are valid or not. We were not there. We weren't working on the project. And we also are not going to address like every issue everybody has ever had with Doris ever. We're pretty specifically talking about the Mija documentary and the issues surrounding it. So we hope that you listen to the whole episode and listen to the whole interview. And thank you for tuning in.
We're here in studio with today's guest. Everybody, please welcome Doris. And can you please introduce yourself for our listeners?
Hola, hola. My name is Doris Anaí. I am an LA-born, SoCal-raised, Mexico City-based singer-songwriter, former music industry veteran, I guess, at this point. And, well, here I am today.
Doris just released an EP titled Por Las Buenas, which is a follow-up to her previous EP. Aprendiendo por las malas. After the very public falling out, she moved to Mexico to disconnect from it all, reconnect with her creativity, and work on healing.
There were a series of posts made by different creatives, like related to their collaborative work with you. Mm-hmm. And I would love if you could just share with us, like, girl, what happened?
Yeah.
You know, what happened and what prompted the move? What happened there with the posts? And how have you worked through this whole process in the year since then?
I was the protagonist, trying to steer away from the word subject, of a documentary called Mija. And that was independently made over the last 3 years, premiered at Sundance last year, then sold to Disney a couple months after. And, pues, ¿qué te digo? It was a whirlwind after Disney bought the film. It was a cocktail of situations that had to happen that finally pushed me. I've been feeling called to move to Mexico for years, and I think I always just told myself, I'm like, now's not the time. Honestly, just making excuses for myself. And then last fall happened in a way that I would have never anticipated. Like, the film was delayed in September, the same week that I found out my grandma was going to pass away. And so ushering in a month of mourning, and then my grandma passed away in October. And then I went through a really horrible breakup, betrayal, that I understood why people need to move after really severe breakups in their life. Never really understood it until that moment. And then literally weeks after that was when everything exploded online. Things came to a head when the film was supposed to be released, and the day before the film was supposed to come out on Disney Plus, I got called into like an emergency Zoom that the film was going to be delayed a week and that they couldn't tell me why, but that they were working on it. And at this point, I had no idea what was going on. A week later, still no news as to, you know, the film is not going to come out on the week push date, and that they said that they'll just continue to work on it and let me know. It wasn't until a few weeks later that I found out the reason why, and I think those are personal details that I can't speak to. And then I understood the severity of the situation and why the film wasn't going to be released. And then I find out that the film is edited according to what was asked of and still continued on to try to still be released into the world. And when I did one last post about the film screening for a LACMA series that Josh Kuhn was curating, and we did like a panel with him for, I had stated like, this is like my last public appearance with the film. I still have no idea what the future of the film has to hold, but here you go. And this is me thinking, or actually knowing, that the film had been edited, redelivered on the director's dime to then be distributed on Disney Plus. And then that's when the chaos ensued. And I receive a comment calling me out on, like, why am I still promoting this film if it has caused harm to others involved in the film? Me thinking, or me knowing, that what has been asked of has been complied with in order for the film to still be released. I then deleted the comment. We're going to be accountable for that, right? I deleted the comment. And I think then that unleashed my past of being a conflict avoidant person. And that's what I know 1,000% that, like, I take ownership for. I think being a young leader, you learn through a lot in real time. You fail over and over and over again. It's trial by fire. But not until it's taken publicly, that's when you really feel like the crushing weight of it, right? And, well, yeah, that's when I saw post after post, comment after comment, and it got out of hand in a way that really broke me. And I don't think anyone can really prepare you for what that feeling will do to take over, like, your whole nervous system, you know? I felt like I wasn't even, like, my right mind for, like, 72 hours minimum. But when you are publicly being held accountable for something that you don't have all the answers for, to try to put a coherent thought together within, like, the usual, like, people are like, it's been 24 hours. Like, people were on Instagram Live saying, it's been 24 hours, she hasn't responded. Meanwhile, I'm, like, trying not to, like, harm myself and not believe fully what is being said to affect, like, the worth of my life. Yeah, this is the first time I'm talking about it, so, or on the record. I've talked about it a lot in the last year with my loved ones, my close ones, with colleagues, with folks that I offered, like, to, like, hey, I haven't heard from you. I don't know if you, what you feel about me, but, like, I would still love to, like, have you in my life, or for you wanting me to be in your life. So if you need me to talk about what happened, I'm an open book. Feel free to ask me. And, like, in that moment, I had to, like, fight the urge to want to post every single receipt that I had to defend myself, because I know that I was just going to contribute to the narrative that was already being painted about me. And to have to address, like, the nuance of every situation case by case. Boys, how do you do that when you're not even right?
Yeah. Thank you for taking us back to that time and walking us through the film and what was going on with that, and the once the call-outs and the posts started to come in. I'm so curious about, like, what was your next step, you know, once you sort of, the dust sort of settled and it was all laid out in front of you and everything was written, and what did you do next?
I mean, I first had to, like, definitely take care of my mental health. To be honest with you, I wanted to check myself in after that happened, but I couldn't afford it. And I was surrounded by, like, friends and family care at that time, like, around the clock. I knew that I had to be in the right state of mind to even try to find a next step forward. Like, how am I going to handle this situation if I don't even want to be alive? I'm an abolitionist, like, first and foremost. And I knew that what I was going to have to step into was a transformative justice process. And that's what I believe in. And that's what a lot of people who did post, I thought, believed in as well. Next step in.
Why, in your perspective, did it get to the point that people felt they needed to do a call out? Why do you think it got to that point?
It first started with the film, right? And the post that was made about that, and really positioning me in a place of power. That I am the one who is accountable to the harm that has been caused due to just how the film played out. So that's one step right there. We're like, Doris is responsible for this film. So let's lay that out right there. And then it brought out my past, where as a young leader, I struggled with conflict resolution. I was spread so thin. I put way too much on my plate at a very young age. I started a business at 23 years old, not going to business school. Just like running off of a vision and a whim. And I think anyone who is an entrepreneur, who is a creative, understands those first few years of struggling and learning through failure. And especially when you're collaborating then within community, you know, you're calling upon, that's the next layer. You're calling upon favors from your friends, people showing up for you in ways like giving homie rates or being flexible with you or being more understanding than I think a typical professional relationship would be, right? Mm-hmm. And I think those are, like, really, like, the three pillars of what went down. The film, my past as a manager, and then this last year of my really first year of expressing myself as an artist, as an independent artist at that. And I think, what's the word I'm trying to find? Perception of all of a sudden Disney's involvement. I think them thinking that there's like a lot of money behind that. And I think like to make it very clear, I think y'all as journalists know this, but historically documentary ethics, documentary subjects do not get paid to tell their story. That would tamper then, right, with the journalism ethics of telling your story, because then you would then be a paid actor, right? And there has been lots of conversations surrounding the ethics of documentaries and director, quote-unquote, subject relationships, because it really is a collaborative process if you're telling your story, and especially if you're doing it independently and then it gets sold and things like that, right? There are loopholes that directors do find, or filmmakers, producers do find, to then compensate certain, you know, folks that were then, that told their stories through documentary. I think especially documentarians who make work about really like traumatic experiences, right? About like border stories or families being separated, things like that. They always, from what I've heard, and I've done a lot of research into this, is that like they feel like, okay, is me telling their story actually helping them? You know, not just that their story is then in helping, giving hope to everyone else who resonates. But in this case, with the kind of film that was being made, I know that the team felt like, okay, this film being made is going to help launch this person's career. And so this is going to give, like, anyone who's in entertainment knows the power of visibility and how can that absolutely catapult your whole life. And I think that was the true intention behind this, was uplifting this whole LA Chicano creative community, that this was going to uplift the work of us as a collective on a global scale. I mean, you know, the film was made independently. I had no idea what was going to become of it, right? If it was going to even premiere at a film festival or, I mean, there was a great team behind it, but you never know. And I think the cards that were dealt to us from the Sundance premiere to the Disney sale, I think people had a lot of perception of like what really went down or what were the motives behind it. And especially when it comes to, I think, money being involved in that. Like, to this day, I have no idea what that film was sold for. I wasn't privy to that knowledge. I wasn't a producer on that film. I signed the same release form that everyone did, that everyone had counsel for. And I think that was, like, the first tipping point, right? That where what was being, one of the things that I read about me was like my past as a manager, right? That I am of like how negotiations and contracts work, right? So then that's, again, putting me in a position of power, of responsibility over this. But I fought to be a producer on this film years ago when this film first started. I was advised to. And then I had to accept that that wasn't going to be my reality for this. Mm-hmm. I do see like where things went left in the position that I was put in, because I did bring in people to be a part of this, right? Whether it was the folks that were in my world, first and foremost, right? Like, this film wouldn't have happened if my family didn't say yes, first and foremost. This film is an immigration story. This film is about an undocumented family who got separated and then got reunited. The music, the community, was like that Trojan horse, right? To be able to tell the story and to resonate with a wider audience, right? Or I mean, it was exactly the intertwinement of my life at that time. And so then again, yeah, it puts me in this position where I had to not only like ask my family to say yes to be a part of this, because if my brother who was deported didn't say yes to share his life, this film wouldn't have happened. When this film first started, my parents were still undocumented. If they said no, this film wouldn't have happened. And then it was the extra layer, right, of my career, of those who I was managing at the time when I first started this film. So summer 2019. 2020, I parted ways with my biggest client. Then I closed my company and then transitioned from managing to mentoring, which ushered in this new person in my life that then director fell in love with and wanted to tell her story to support her because she saw the parallels in our lives. So then that layer happened. And then you go into post-production. And then bringing in the collaborators that bring the narration to life. I narrate the whole film based off of interviews that I did over the years, old journal entries, old Instagram posts that the director dug up. And then there was obviously writing consultants there and contributors that were a part of that, that I really fought hard to be a part of because I wanted our community's voice to be within the fabric of this film. I wanted this film to really be for us, by us. That was the pure intention behind it. But then you bring in these institutions, these perceptions, and then the eventual fallout that became public. And then you match that with like any unresolved conflict. And like we all know that unresolved conflict turns into resentment, right? And then I think that just bubbled up into a lot of my past that then came to the surface, a lot of stuff that should have been handled privately that I should have initiated, matched with something that was taken publicly that I learned my lesson from the past of being an avoidant person and trying to find the healthiest avenue of resolution within now this realm of my life. I was like, all right, I learned my lesson of being super afraid of conflict. You know, I did the personal deep work to understand why I have these traumas surrounding conflict and what that's rooted in, and then how can I apply that to my life as a person and my interpersonal relationships, to my professional relationships. And I'm like, all right, bet.
We're going to continue hearing from Doris, but before that, a word from our sponsors.
I love sharing positive tips with my listeners on everything from health challenges to relationship troubles. Because life happens, baby, but you got this. Hi there, I'm Honey German, and I know we can all use some positive energy these days. That's why I make sure to empower my community, because a bit of motivation and support can go a long way. And luckily, we have State Farm to support us. Like when you talk to a State Farm agent to choose the coverage you need, and they have the options to protect the things you value most. It's the perfect positive tip you need. State Farm is also a big supporter of the My Cultura podcast network, where we as podcast hosts get to share our experiences and stories. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Listen to new episodes of your favorite My Cultura shows wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
And we're back.
I'm really interested in the detail about like the releases and the contracts that everybody signed. You're talking about you signed the same releases as everybody else. Mm-hmm. And that is something that I remember seeing specifically in the comments and the posts was these statements of like almost an expectation that you counsel people. I remember saying to Diosa, like, it's fascinating these comments specifically about the contracts, because like, at least to my understanding, in the state of California, in order to give someone legal advice or review a contract with them, you have to have a license to practice the law. Like, you're not allowed to give legal advice if you're not a lawyer, you know, like point blank period. So that in particular stood out to me about like the flavor of the call out
so to speak. Why do you think folks had this expectation that, like, you review their contracts for them?
I think because of the position I used to hold, you know. As a manager, as a producer, you know. I mean, not a producer of the film, but, like, I used to produce concerts and events and things, right? And so the position that I held in a lot of these folks' life was, like, very differently, right? Like, I was a supervisor amongst my own peers, you know, for a long chapter of my life. And now with this film, it also ushered in, like, the artist, like, chapter of my life, where I, like, then delegate these things, right, to my team. So that way, I mean, we all know this is, like, I think you both as creatives too understand this, where certain things you both cannot touch, mm-hmm. you know, you cannot handle. I will say there was one contract of a artist I used to manage that then technically I facilitated, because I had to pass that over to his attorney to greenlight, that mm-hmm. then my assistant at that time then confirmed to get him to sign and then pass that over. And that's, like, that was one of the things that I wanted to post receipts of and things like that, that I knew that at that time was not going to help me either way. Like, it was in too deep. Mm-hmm. Like, if I tried to post anything and be like, oh, mira, look what she's trying to do, you know? And, you know, I think to usher in some kind of, like, transformative justice language, like, that's called the feeding frenzy. That's that's the mob mentality that everyone wants to just, like, jump in on and, like, contribute their latigazos to. They want to throw their stone.
The pylon is, we've seen year after year, time after time, pylon after pylon. And it's very, there's a predictability to it. You know, it's like once that spark is lit, like, it's a wildfire now. Mm-hmm. And I think what was also fascinating to me is at the end of all of it, like, and we're reading and we're looking and we couldn't figure out what happened, mm-hmm. you know, like because it was very sort of like it seemed very personal and there was not an explicit, to my knowledge, there was no explicit, like, I was hired and promised to get paid this much. I did my job and then I wasn't paid. Like, there was nothing as straightforward as that. You know, mm-hmm. so was there, just to, like, ask the question and, like, get the clarity, like, was there someone who was promised to get paid to do a job, who fulfilled the job and then didn't get paid?
No. Like, I learned my lesson where it's like, cuentas claras, amistades largas, right? Like, I wanted to see that. I'm like, all right, anyone who hasn't had an invoice paid, stand up, you know, like, please post your receipt of, like, of countless emails or something that you've been chasing me, something, you know? I think, yeah, like I said, it got very convoluted with a lot of nuance of situation by situation, whether it was the film or my past as a manager or my present as an artist. And the question that y'all are both asking about what happened, a lot of people asked that, and I even asked that, because we ushered in a transformative justice process, right, to reach out to every single person that made any post, you know, a statement. And only one person showed up.
We asked Doris to connect us with the one person who participated in the transformative justice process, but due to confidentiality reasons, it was not possible. We also asked to speak with the mediator, but they're on sabbatical. The firm Doris hired is MMG Earth, an award-winning research and change management firm that helps people in the private and public sectors transform their communities and global societies.
How many invitations would you say you sent out? How many invites?
When I first started, I started with, like, a priority five. Like, these are five of priority. These are the people who took, like, a really firm stance online. And then I did another layer. Like, we did layer by layer. As we first started to debrief, right? I mean, we'll get into what a transformative justice process looks like. But yeah, we reached out to countless people. You know, I think, like, even people that I saw, like a comment. And I'm like, do we have to talk about anything? You know, I really wanted to cover all my bases when it came to that. But I only had a conversation with one person. And that conversation had to be split into two sessions to really fully understand. And what I gathered from that conversation is the same thing that, like, a friend of mine who had a conversation with the same person and had the same sentiments of, like, well, what did happen, you know? And even after having that conversation, it's like, well, that could have been a phone call.
And I also, this is also interesting to me because I think, like, in our, like, little creative community, the word that we've been using more is call in. Right. And I'm curious, like, why do you think that you received a call out
as opposed to a call in. And what were they asking of you? What was the ask? What did the folks who called you out want to see from you? What did they request from you?
There was no call to action. I think it was like a full like removal of community. I think it's just like to like air whatever they needed to air out and be like, I guess more like a warning, like, or I don't know, a warning, like a, this was my experience with this person, and but I'm not gonna be clear about what it was, but this is what it was. I don't know, it's, I mean, even trying to explain it, I feel like I'm stumbling over my words because there wasn't, it's still confusing to me because I didn't have the conversations that I wish I got to have.
Did you hope that people would have said yes to this transformative justice process as mediation of the five that you reached out to?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, especially the five, because those five were like definitely like, I think, the pillars of like what lit the fire, right? And for it to come to my attention in such a way, and then the trickle down of all the things. But like, absolutely. I mean, I financially invested in this transformative justice process. This isn't free. For me to do my due diligence, right? I'm like, okay, it came to this point. Well, if my politic that I've lived through as an abolitionist is going to like now apply to my own life in the situation, then I need to like live by that and write it out and follow through. And so, yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, I will, at the end of the day, I think that transformative justice process like then liberated me, like allowed me to liberate myself and to step out of like solitude. But yeah, I would have loved to have understood completely where people felt wronged, or for me to then be able to say to their face, like, you know, to take accountability and to apologize for any and all ways that I've harmed them, and to understand what is that call to action for me to do better, to do this right for them, right? Like, what can I do to make this right?
Did you get no responses, or did you get flat out no's? I'm not participating in this.
It was a mixed bag. I think some of them were like, I am interested, but I don't know if I can. Another one was like a very hateful response. A lot of them were no response. The majority of them was just zero response. And with like, I made sure that we did multiple follow-ups on each one. So it wasn't just like one email was sent out. I'm like, oh, okay, you didn't respond, bye. You know, like I was quite persistent, and I tried to find ways where I'm like, okay, like I think we need to like walk people through what a transformative justice process is, to like even for folks to understand. It's like, you know, you work with a facilitator to be able to then debrief with you to understand what's happening. That facilitator can then speak to like to begin a like a transformative justice circle process, right? You offer an opportunity for this process to begin. Transformative justice facilitator then speaks with the person on the other side first, speaks to you, and then you come together, right? And I think it's very much outlining like the community agreements of like, this is not a form of punishment. This isn't going to be like a place of like where like more harm can be caused, right? And I mean, the amount of people that we reached out to, I wish we got to fully step into it.
What would you say to someone who might feel, well, Doris, you know, collaborated with all these creatives and got this huge platform and like leveraged her artistic community like for her own success? I think that's like a vibe, that's like a feeling, mm-hmm. right? That you've undoubtedly heard yourself.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, what do you or would you say to like a statement like that?
I think that's the part that hurt the most, because it was people that I broke bread with, that I collaborated with out of like pure intention of, I think anyone who deeply knows me and my heart knows that like I've always been rooted in like wanting this to be, this industry to be as like for us, by us as possible, and for us to all like build more room at the table for, because there's enough room for all of us to eat. I've never been a competitive person. I've never like thought to even put anyone down, to put myself ahead. And I think, like, I can say that with my whole chest. That's my character. That's who I am. And every single person that I collaborated with, either it was like a friend or I think honestly, most of who posted it, there were people who were like former friends of mine. And especially of what was said specifically about the film, that I used this film and like the use these collaborators in order to like leverage myself as like some celebrity. So like, let's take it back years ago, the version of Doris who like sacrificed herself and was the people pleaser and put herself last to like such an unhealthy place in order to like put everyone else on, right? I was like running wild to make everyone else's career happen. And then all of a sudden the pandemic happened and then my life changed a lot. For me to then finally be like, okay, maybe I can prioritize myself. Maybe I can make some dreams happen for myself too. Who knows how that's going to play out? But like, let's see, because I'm not going to regret this when I'm older for like not trying. And so saying yes to the film at that time was the hope of telling our story to help millions of other families who have also been separated at the border, family members been deported, they're waiting for their residency to come. And at that time as a manager, when I said yes to the film, so like, all right, amazing, this is gonna be a platform to put on the whole community of creatives. That was always the pure intention, the root of it all. And then where it went down the line, like I never came from a place of like, haha, I'm gonna use this person for what they're worth to continue advancing into life. Like, I don't move that way. And if I'm going to be perceived that way, then I have to accept that. And that, like, I think that's one of those things that, like, que digan lo que digan, like, you know what you've done and what you meant to do or your intentions were. Obviously, things can go astray, and that's where, like, where things need to be made very clear. Mm-hmm. I know that at the end of the day, I think like my track record proves to like the years of work that I made sure to position everyone else to keep eating, to keep their careers flourishing, and to the point where then it turned on me. And I never, like, I think people think I had this like master plan of like, okay, yeah, I'm gonna like all of a sudden ditch my career on the industry side of things in order so I can like strategize myself into a position of whatever, receiving the spotlight all of a sudden. But very honestly, that was thrust upon me. The film found me in ways that like you can't even make up. Like, I didn't pitch myself to be the protagonist of a documentary. Mm-hmm. And then when it came to the point of last year of working as an independent artist, I think anyone who is a creative and even folks who I know who had opinions about me, I know they're not getting, they're paying people like full rates what they would pay for, like a brand would pay for. Like,
absolutely. Everybody is doing homie rates and doing work for free and labor swaps.
Exactly.
And we call that collaboration and building community and et cetera, et cetera. Keep listening to Locatora. We've got more in store after these messages.
I love sharing positive tips with my listeners on everything from health challenges to relationship troubles, because life happens, baby, but you got this. Hi there. I'm Honey German, and I know we can all use some positive energy these days. That's why I make sure to empower my community, because a bit of motivation and support can go a long way. And luckily, we have State Farm to support us. Like when you talk to a State Farm agent to choose the coverage you need, and they have the options to protect the things you value most. It's the perfect positive tip you need. State Farm is also a big supporter of the My Cultura podcast network, where we as podcast hosts get to share our experiences and stories. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Listen to new episodes of your favorite My Cultura shows wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. and you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
And we're back.
I'm curious too, Doris, so you hire the transformative justice facilitators and you're doing outreach to everybody who posted or engaged online with the call out in some way. Those who didn't accept the invitation or who didn't participate in the transformative justice conversation, did you receive, like, from any of those people an unpaid invoice? Did anyone send you an invoice for things that they didn't get paid for?
No.
Did anyone send, like, a request for credit that they didn't receive that they were promised for work? I know people listening want to probably have these questions also. Was there any other follow-up from the folks that posted asking for something more or other than transformative justice?
No. I think it was made very, without me even having to say, I think it was made very clear what people just wanted to do.
And what do you think that was?
It is punitive forms of justice that we've been socially conditioned to participate in, whether it's shame, removing people from community, right? If we think about traditional forms of incarceration, right? You remove someone did something bad, right? And instead of whether it's engaging with them with like mental health support or mediation or things that abolitionists believe in, right? They're then sent, they're imprisoned, right? And they're removed from community. And any ability to then advance their life in any way at that time, that's the punishment, right? There wasn't a call to action of like, we want Doris to do this, or she did this, so she owes this, or we're calling her in to heal this and to have conversations about this because she's avoiding this. It was just a lot was thrown at the public community board for everyone to read and scroll.
As we talk about this, like, in our podcasting career, we have had our own call-ins and call-outs. We've had our own experiences. Like, people have gotten mad at us for different things over the years in different capacities. And we've had our own experiences with what starts as a DM leads to, like, 12 emails, you know, like, calling us every name in the book. Like, these things, we haven't been without our own. And we've done episodes and we've addressed issues when there's been a call out or a call in. Like, we've, you know, we've dealt with our own things, I think, as everybody probably does at one point or another in their artistic careers and in collaborating and building. And I just want to throw that out there and say that we have had our own fuck ups and our own issues, you know, in our own time, you know, interpersonally, creatively. It here and there, like, these things happen, you know? So I want to own that too and claim that, you know? And I think the only way that these things have ever been resolved with us is, like, we've that talking one-on-one with those folks who are upset with us. It's never been resolved on Twitter or in Instagram comments or in the stories. Like, nothing has, for us, ever been resolved that way. I find that year after year, the men, the Latino men, or mask-presenting people in our communities often, you know, can get away with a lot of things and are not held to the same standard over and over again. And I also find that very fascinating. This is a pattern in our community, in our creative community, in our transformative justice, anti-carceral abolitionist, all the self imposed labels, by the way, that we anoint ourselves with, like mm-hmm. we knight ourselves with these titles, you know. Years ago, right, Las Cafeteras had a big call out online, and that was a more severe call out. Those accusations were very specific. A former band member who did come forward was really giving very detailed examples of abuse and controlling behavior during band practice, et cetera, right? This was years ago. And I remember there was a lot of promises on their end for like, we're going to do a town hall, we're going to do this. I don't think any of that ever happened.
None of it happened, at least to our knowledge. It was painted as a public forum.
Yes.
We're having a community town hall. Whether that happened privately, we don't know.
Yes.
I think when I was in the thick of what I was going through, I was receiving calls, text messages from loved ones who really just wanted to make sure I was okay, especially because if they know me and my journey with mental health and things like that, they just wanted to reiterate like your life, we still need you, you know. And one of them specifically shared his own experience with like his company going through ushering like a restorative justice, transformative justice process. And he had said that there needs to be more transformative justice survival stories, and I need you to be one of them. And I think that just like is what carried me through this whole last year of like, all right, I am not going to let this kill me first and foremost. But I think I've also accepted that the things that have happened in my life have ushered me into this purpose of like being like a living testimony, whether it was like the documentary or me sharing my story along the way that led into the documentary. And then I hid away for a long time. And I felt like my voice didn't matter anymore, that my life didn't matter anymore, that my story didn't matter anymore. And then like slowly but surely I've been receiving like little earth angel messages and reminders that they all absolutely do. And now to finally be in a place to like share that experience for, I mean, I don't think everyone's gonna go through what I went through. I don't wish this upon anyone. But I think another friend told me that resonated with me to like close the loop on this thought is that like what she saw happen to me felt like a social experiment to see how people within the community responded to this and for her to understand who to trust and not to trust.
And to be very clear, you know, this is not about like victims of violence coming forward and sharing their story, right? This is this very gray area where like we've been talking about all episode. It's very vague. It's unclear. It seems very personal. They're asking for things like for you to review their legal contracts that you literally are not allowed to do. You know, like there are these things that make this type of a call out, like we can talk about it on its own, right? Like, don't go, like, if you're listening, don't go out there and, oh, you're victim blaming. Nobody sent in an invoice for unpaid funds, it sounds like. Nobody asked for credit that they didn't receive, it sounds like. And when the offer for transformative justice was given, they didn't participate, right? Like, that's a standalone, that's its own thing. But I feel like sometimes what happens is, over the years, we've seen this too, people can create an entire sort of brand for themselves as like social conscious, community oriented like leaders by participating in a drag or a call out. Like that's how some people make a name for themselves.
I think this is hard, you know.
Yeah.
I think that this was a moment, the thing that divided a lot of folks within our community. I had to accept that I became this like polarizing figure, if you will. I know that a lot of people look to me in a different way and held me at a different standard than most. And it was like, yeah, my own peers who would then participate in something like this. But now that we're here a year later, it's like, what did that do? Is the big question.
I think a really... Well, what I'm curious about as a way to kind of close out this conversation, and because you've laid out, you know, what happened, the steps you took, and now, you know, you're performing, you're releasing this EP. what does rebuilding trust look like for you?
Just have a really to trust my intuition stronger than ever before. Have a higher level of discernment. Cross my T's, dot my I's, double check, triple check everything. Have very, very clear conversations with every single person that I work with. And accepting that not everyone is for me and I'm not for everyone. I had to accept that, like, a lot of folks that were surrounding me that I thought were my friends that called me family, well, then have the capability to turn around and literally the next day, like, one person was with me the night that it happened, the next day they were posting about me. Yeah. So if that can happen, then I can assume anything can happen, right? And I don't want to be, I was so closed off for some time and I was so depressed and I felt extremely alone. I isolated myself even more in Mexico. Like, I went to go heal and process all the things that just happened to me, because, like, what happened online was paired with, like, a really bad breakup and betrayal too. And I had to, like, fight my own urges to want to, like, punish as well. I think, like, what this whole process teaches you is, like, how you want to then punish the people that have harmed you as well. I could have gone and contado mis verdades, but I didn't, because I had to believe that other people are capable. You have to believe that people are capable to grow and heal and do better.
Yeah. And for every person that, you know, posts and participates in a call out like that, there's somebody else that has receipts on you, that has an issue with you, that has a gripe with you. I feel, you know, that saying that you're a villain in somebody's story. You know what I mean? And sometimes it's just a matter of, sometimes people are choosing not to come and talk about you in public, but it's not because they don't have a reason to. You know, I think everybody has their demons and their issues with somebody else, you know? And so it's a choice ultimately, right? Like, whether you air out the personal issue publicly or whether you reach out and talk about it one-on-one. It's a choice.
Yeah, and again, to reiterate what you said, that this, the exception is victims of violence. Like, let's be very clear on that. I think I do believe sometimes it does have to get to a point where women have to keep each other safe, right? And they're warning each other of, like, abusive men. For, so let's minimize, like, all the DV cases possible, right? But when it's, yeah, this vague, nuanced area, it's like this very gray area. What can we do to try to move forward as a community? If, like, we, the countless conversations that I have had about this, people were asking, well, yeah, like, what did the community do for, like, aftercare?
I think that it's a lot harder to actually walk the talk and actually implement the praxis and not just the theory that we always talk about here on Locatora Radio. If you made it this far, thank you for listening. And we will catch you next time.
Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, is executive produced and hosted by me, Mala Munoz, and Diosa Femme.
Story editing by me, Diosa.
Audio editing by Stephanie Franco.
Thank you to our locamores, our listeners, for all of your support.
Thank you for traveling with Amex Platinum. To your right, you'll see Oceanside Relaxation at a fine hotel and resort property. When booked through Amex Travel, you can enjoy complimentary breakfast for 2 and 4 p.m. late checkout. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
There are a lot of things that matter to me. Family, community, culture, and peace of mind. Hi, it's Wilmer Valderrama, and when balancing life, I have to say nothing brings more comfort than having support. And when it comes to ensuring those things that matter to you the most, State Farm offers the support with an agent available in person or on the phone to discuss your coverage options. Support when you need it, however you choose. That's State Farm's way. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.